Ladies and gentlemen, our next speaker has been a speaker. There was a time in Georgia about 20 years ago when he was the only official elected to federal office from the state of Georgia. The legislature was controlled by Democrats who tried to redistrict him into nowhere. The governor was a Democrat, and he survived, and he went on to lead a Republican revolution in Georgia, and to a pretty good result in 1994 nationally. We are honored to have him here, Speaker Newt Gingrich. Welcome.
Joni just got her 1100th picture. Let me first of all say thank you to all of you for being here, and I want to recognize my very good friends, Karen and Rick and their family. Rick is a tremendous leader and was a real ally in the House and a great leader in the Senate. I'm delighted to be here with him, and great to have Thaddeus McCotter here, and I think Governor Plenty will be here presently. These are all good people. And I want to start by saying none of them are my opponent. They're friends of mine. I have one opponent, Barack Obama. Let me also say that this can't be an election just about the presidency. We need 12 Senate seats and 30 to 40 House seats so that when we win with a second contract with America, we spend the first 90 to 120 days really fundamentally changing Washington in a decisive way. That can't be done just from the Oval Office. That requires a team, and we have to have a campaign that unifies a team across the country and be committed to the entire team winning in November of next year. Finally, in terms of campaign, let me say that I'm not here to ask you to be for me. You know, when you're for somebody, you go and you vote on election day, and if they win, you go home and say, boy, I sure hope they can do it. I'm here to ask you to be with me, because turning this country around will be an 8-year job, and we will need your help every single day for 8 years. We'll need your help to remind the House and Senate what their job is to help us get it done. We'll need your help to see what's working and what isn't working and give us feedback so we can have lots of mid-course corrections when we get things not quite right. But we also need your help for a very powerful reason. How many of you would say you believe in the 10th Amendment and returning power to the states and the people thereof? Raise your hand if you believe in the 10th Amendment. All right, now I want you to think about this. One of the bills in the contract with America next year will be a 10th Amendment Enforcement Act. That bill is going to return a lot of power back to Iowa. But here's why I want you to be with me and not for me. If you're going to shrink the bureaucracy in Washington, you had better grow the citizenship in Iowa, because you are going to have to fill the vacuum created by getting rid of all these agencies and returning power back home. So we're really talking about an agreement that in return for shrinking Washington government, you're going to be bigger, more active citizens helping solve problems in your own community. If we're able to cut taxes and give you more take-home pay, if we're able to create more jobs, you're going to have to be more active in your charities and in your churches and synagogues and more active in your community. Now that's the contract. You cannot have a successful America without active citizens actively doing their job. And so I would ask you to be with me, because I think this is a decisive time, and I agree that this is, in fact, a point of genuine choice for America about whether we continue to be a country endowed by our Creator, or we give that up and become a European-style country, whether our bureaucrats deal with us as citizens or our bureaucrats deal with us as subjects, whether our judges follow the Constitution or our judges rewrite the Constitution to fit their own personality and their own egos. It's a fundamental choice. But I want to talk briefly about where we are right now, because I think, frankly, we're in so much trouble that we need to try to actually solve problems before the election. It's not easy, because you have a president who combines in a remarkable way radicalism with incompetence. You know, I reached this conclusion because I had negotiated a great deal with Bill Clinton in order to get welfare reform and to get had the first tax cut in 16 years, and in order to get four consecutive balanced budgets. When you have a Democrat in the White House, you have to negotiate. We spent 35 days negotiating. And I watched this recent fiasco with the debt ceiling, and I began to realize after a while, the thing that's fascinating about Obama is that when he's radical, he's competent. So he could ram through Obamacare. When he's not radical, he's incompetent. So he couldn't figure out how to do a deal on the debt ceiling because he didn't have Pelosi and Reid to ram through what he wanted. And so you have this weird thing. You know, when you look up and watch, if he's doing well, he's doing the wrong thing. And if he's trying to do the right thing, he's doing it bad. It's an amazing trait. I do want to say one thing about what Congressman McCotter said, because I listened carefully and I was fascinated. But as a Georgian, I simply want to say that to suggest that Barack Obama is Jimmy Carter in a better suit is not fair. Jimmy Carter wore very good suits. He wore slightly strange sweaters, but he wore very good suits. And I want to defend him on that. But I'm standing here next to Reagan because I want to talk about where we are right this minute. I think it's one of the most amazingly fascinating periods we've ever been through. We know how to create jobs. This president took over from Jimmy Carter after Carter had wrecked the American economy. We were sliding into the deepest recession since the Great Depression. We had rising inflation. We had 21, 22% interest rates, 13% inflation. We had gasoline lines because the president decided to solve our problems by rationing. Some of you may remember. How many of you remember when you used to have to get gasoline every other day based on the last number of your license plate? Right? I mean, I'm not making this up, right? Young people think this can't be true. But Carter, like Obama, believed in government. And like Obama, he didn't realize there were no shovel-ready jobs. He didn't realize that there was no competent way to ration. A good friend of mine was 13 when they were rationing gasoline. And he said he remembers it vividly because his job every morning was to take a screwdriver and go out back and change the license so that the car that needed gasoline had the right license plate. And I developed a test for being liberal or conservative. If you hear that story and you believe that any government which adopts a rule so dumb that we're teaching 13-year-olds how to cheat should change the rule to apply common sense, that means you're a conservative. On the other hand, if you hear that story and you say to yourself, we need license plate police at every gas station, then you are a liberal and you could probably get tenure at some famous university. Reagan had four pillars of creating jobs. And frankly, if we could convince President Obama of this, he ought to call the Congress back in and pass this. Because we need to turn this economy around, because it's very, very dangerous to have 9 or 10% unemployment in a free society. It is culturally destructive. America only works when Americans are working. You can only be a free people when you can earn your own living. It is very dangerous, and it's also dangerous because if we get a major shock in Europe or a major shock in the Middle East, we could actually drop into a deeper depression than we are now. We're already in the Obama depression. But there's a grave danger that we could get into a much deeper and more dangerous depression. And so we ought to be doing things now. So what did Reagan do? Did four things. Cut taxes, deregulate, focus on American energy, rebuild belief in job creation, hard work, and entrepreneurship. So how would you do it today? Taxes, very straightforward. Zero capital gains tax. Overnight, hundreds of billions of dollars would come into the United States, and you'd have new factories, new businesses, new investments. Drop the corporate rate. Drop the corporate rate to 12.5%. Ironically, for your liberal friends, you can go to the campus and tell folks this and watch their face. You drop the tax rate to 12.5%, you will get more money out of General Electric than you're getting at 35%. Because the 35%, you're getting zero, because they hire hundreds of tax lawyers to avoid the taxes. But at 12.5%, they'll fire half the lawyers and write the check. At 12.5%, you'll liberate $1 trillion in profits locked up overseas that they're not going to bring home as long as the tax rate's this high. Three, go to 100% expenses. That means if you're a farmer, a factory, a doctor, an office, when you buy new equipment, you write it off in 1 year. And that means you're in a position to have the most modern equipment in the world with the greatest productivity, with the greatest creativity, so we can compete with China and India and win by having American workers better equipped than anybody else in the world. Finally, straightforward. Abolish the death tax permanently. It is an immoral tax. We want families that are successful, focused on job creation, not on avoiding taxes. We want them to meet to build bigger factories, not to meet with their lawyer to avoid the tax. It's that simple. So that's tax policy. Deregulation. One. Replace the Environmental Protection Agency with a brand new Environmental Solutions Agency designed to have the economy be as important as the environment, designed to cooperate with local governments, not dictate to them, and designed to find innovative solutions working with business, not litigation and regulation to crush the economy. Second, repeal immediately the Dodd-Frank regulatory bill, this is a no-brainer. Not a single House Republican voted for Dodd-Frank on the first round. Not a single one. Now, if it was that bad last year, it's that bad this year. They should repeal it in the House the first week of September, send it to the Senate. We should work in the states of the 23 Democrats who are up for re-election. We should make it quite clear to them. They can make our day. They can either repeal Dodd-Frank or next year we'll repeal them. Either approach works fine. But Dodd-Frank, if you go to your local banker, they'll tell you, they are crushing independent banks, they are destroying small businesses, they are driving down the price of housing, they are creating a corrupt center of power in the Treasury, which will be able to micromanage every major bank. This is a 2,300-page disaster. It does to financial services what Obamacare does to healthcare, and it should be repealed in its entirety now. Last regulatory example, shrink the power of the National Labor Relations Board. What they are doing to Boeing in South Carolina is a direct threat to every right to work state, and they are going to drive factories overseas by saying you can't move from a compulsory union state to a right to work state, which means companies will say, fine, I'm moving to China. This is absolutely crazy what they're trying to do to Boeing, which is the largest exporter and the largest manufacturing exporter in the United States. Finally, we need a 21st century Food and Drug Administration whose assignment is start in the laboratory and move new products and new solutions to the patient as rapidly as possible so the United States becomes the most dynamic center of new products in healthcare, because health will be the largest market in the 21st century, and we want those health jobs in the United States exporting to Europe and China. We don't want them in China exporting to the United States, and that requires a new 21st century Food and Drug Administration. Deregulation. Third pillar of the Reagan program, energy. Very simple. I am for an American energy program that produces American energy. I'm taking some heat because I am for ethanol. I voted for ethanol in 1984 when it was called gasohol. I'm for ethanol for a practical reason. If I've got to choose between money going to Iowa or Iraq, I pick Iowa. If I've got to choose between money going to South Dakota or Saudi Arabia, I choose South Dakota. It is a practical, renewable, and if you look at the increase in corn production, and I was just a Pioneer Seed today, the fact is we're going to grow more corn per acre for the next 20 years at an amazing scale. We can produce both food and energy, and we ought not let anybody intimidate us into believing we can. But I'm also for oil and gas. I'm for coal, I'm for wind, I'm for solar, I'm for nuclear. I want every possible American energy because I want to get us away from depending on foreign dictators. It's a very straightforward model. If the government wants more revenue, there's an easy solution. Let them produce oil and gas and pay royalties on it. You own, the American people, we own 69% of Alaska. Alaska is twice the size of Texas. That means the federal land in Alaska is 1.5 Texas. So you can take half of Texas in national parks, wilderness areas, and preserves, and that would still leave you an area the size of Texas to explore for oil, gas, and minerals. We own 89% of Nevada. With all due respect to Harry Reid, there are large chunks of 89% we could probably be developing. They're all locked up by liberals. The greatest fear liberals have is we're going to find all this new energy. Then all their arguments about scarcity disappear. They just discovered oil in Ohio. It's horrifying. I mean, what if we have so much energy we don't have to worry about all these liberals? I've always tried to explain to people. The Smart is a very nice car. I'm not opposed to people driving a Smart. But you can't put a gun rack in a Smart. Finally, the fourth pillar for Ronald Reagan was simple. It was to make people feel proud to be American. It was to make people feel proud to create jobs. It was to praise people who went to work every Monday. It was to praise small business owners who worried every week about meeting payroll. The cost of class warfare is food stamps. No one should be confused. Yesterday it was reported the largest number of Americans in history were on food stamps. This is the best food stamp president in American history. And class warfare kills jobs, class warfare kills paychecks, and class warfare puts people on food stamps. I would like to be the best paycheck president in American history, and I would like to make sure that we reward and we encourage the people who have the courage to go out and create jobs, because that's what we need right now in the economic mess we're in. Let me say two last things. This president should not get away with going on a bus tour of the Midwest to explain that he cares about jobs. He's not a candidate. Candidates take bus tours. Presidents do their job. He's had 34 fundraisers while jobs have been disappearing. What he ought to do is cut off foreign travel, give up any campaign event as long as unemployment's as high as it is, focus on governing, sit down with people who know how to create jobs, come up with a doable program, call the Congress back, and actually pass a program to create jobs that liberates the free market and liberates small business and gets us back to work. But for him to go and go on a tour as though he was a candidate is an insult to the intelligence of every American. That doesn't create a single job, and it isn't going to re-elect Barack Obama. Finally, I believe this secret 12-person select committee should be challenged in a simple way. Remember Obama campaigned and said, you'll get to watch the conference committees on C-SPAN? I think this select committee should hold all of its meetings in public. If you have 12 people looking at trillions of dollars in the future, we owe it to them. We owe it to the American people to say this committee should meet in public. We should all know what they're talking about. There should be no surprises. Because otherwise we're going to get maneuvered once again into a crisis at the very end where we either do what the establishment wants us to or there'll be some terrible outcome. Well, I for one, am sick and tired of Washington backing us into a corner where our choice is two terrible outcomes, and I challenge the select committee from day one. Meet in public, state your positions in public, be accountable in public, and let the entire country know what you're doing every single day. This is too big to hide. This is the kind of leadership I gave for 20 years in Congress, the kind of leadership I gave as Speaker. If you are with me and I become your president, it's the kind of leadership with your help that we'll execute for this entire country for the next 8 years. Thank you very, very much for becoming the president.